Today's sermon thought or title is called Alive and Well. Jesus, in this gospel narrative, is meeting the disciples exactly where he said he'd meet them. Prior to his death, he speaks with them and says, I want you to, after I die and get up from the grave, I want you to meet me in Galilee. Galilee was really where Jesus started his ministry. It really was his home camp. And oftentimes we look at Acts chapter 2 and we hear those who spoke or heard others speak in their known language. We read the text in Acts 2 that says, when the question is posed, aren't these all Galileans? Without really understanding the context, why they were so surprised. Galilee was a small place. It wasn't this huge place. It was a place for commoners. Place for commoners. Jesus chose common people to do an uncommon work. It's on the Sea of Galilee where he sees Andrew and Peter fishing. I mean, think about it, y'all. He chooses fishermen. He chooses plain people to do a powerful work. He entrusts them, young people, to do something unheard of. The disciples weren't in their 40s and 50s. Scholars say they're probably in their 20s and under. They were younger than probably all but 20 of us in this room. Yet they were trusted to do something that nobody really ever thought of doing. And that's to spread good news. But nobody ever thought of doing it because nothing like this had ever been done. That God, or any God at that fact, would become 100% human after seeing the need for the world, be so compassionate towards those who've turned their backs on him, to send his son to die on the cross for their sin, to allow them to think that they had all power, that they had all the authority. You know how sometimes we feel like we got all. But he does all this knowing that he's going to get up from the grave. And those who he chose would be the first ones he'd have to convince that he was alive and well. And if we were honest about it, you and I probably are in that same boat today. God is still convincing us through messages, through teachings, that Jesus, the only Son of God, is alive and well. And we are living thousands of years, a couple thousand years after the resurrection. But our text today shows just a few days after the resurrection. And the issue is, Jesus is right there. He's there in the midst of them. And you know what? They didn't expect him to be. Now that ought to really blow our minds because Jesus was everywhere with them. Watch this. You all remember the storm that was on the sea? Jesus says to them in one of the passages, one of the Gospels, meet me on the other side. He goes up in the mountain to pray. They get out on the water, and the storm arises on the water. They're in a boat, Jesus has sent them, and then all of a sudden they see a figure in the fog. Peter, as they're trying to figure out, remember they thought it was a ghost. Amen. Jesus says these words, be not afraid, it is I. Peter says, well, if it's you, you know how we do with God. If it's really you want me to do this, then show me. He says, if it's you, bid me to come out on the water. Peter gets to walking on the water. The point of that story was They didn't expect him there, but he was there. But watch this. Another gospel writes the account. They're on the boat with Jesus in the boat. Storm arises. You know how we get after we've gotten a confirming word. Storm's going to come. He's promised to be there with us. He's there with us. And we begin to act like he doesn't care. We make it as if he ought to respond the way we respond, even though he's God. But you and I have to understand there is no panic when you've got all power. There's no panic button for the Savior to push. We might push it, but there's no panic button in heaven. And you know the story. Master, don't you care? This ship is going down. We're about to perish. He looks at them. Ye of little faith. One passage he actually says, where is your faith? He's there with them all along. But watch this. They didn't expect him to do anything. Same Jesus who they were with, though, who has two pieces of fish, five loaves of bread. Remember, they're hungry. You know, we get hungry sometimes. They've been walking with him a long time. They say, Master, we're hungry. We know they got to be hungry. But what we ought to do is send these people home because we don't have enough to feed them. It's almost as if their selfishness creeps in. Send them home. Just worry about us. Jesus asked the question, what do you have in your hand? We don't have anything. But then somebody says, I think it was Andrew, there's a lad here. He's got two fish and five loaves of bread. Jesus was there with them. And he did something about it. He begins to thank his Father. Breaks the fish. Breaks the bread. Passes it out. And then they had leftovers. He was there with them. But it's clear they didn't expect him to do anything. It's messed up how their expectation with him went down when he died. It was already pretty low because when you read the gospel accounts, there are several other times when they just did not expect Jesus to do anything. But it went even further down when he was put in the tomb. The astonishment of the message we looked at last week when Mary Magdalene, Mary and Salome get to the tomb. They look inside. They're invited inside the very tomb that they suspected the stone would be blocking. They look in. Remember we talked last week? They leave and don't say anything. It was almost as if they did not believe that Jesus was alive and well. And then we looked at the very next verse to see that they didn't tell anybody until Jesus showed up. Here now, we come to a place where the disciples had already heard that Jesus was alive and well. Like many of us, we hear every Sunday. He died, but early Sunday morning. He got up with all power in heaven and in earth. Yet, there's something in us that just doesn't believe he's alive and well. It shows off in how we talk to people. It shows off in how we go about our jobs. It almost shows off as it almost says, well, we don't believe we've got the answer to him. But when we really understand the Great Commission, you and I understand that saved folk have to answer too. Because here he entrusts his disciples with the Great Commission. They're going with a mission. And failure to accomplish this mission could be detrimental to all of our lives. I would argue that all of us have some loved ones that we want to see in heaven. But our failure to go about this commission could have possibly make it to be so. Well, the last time we saw them was when we went on to glory. Our sensitivity to talking about Jesus is as if he's not alive and well. And I know that there has been a consistent prodding from your pastor to share the gospel, to invite people to share. But watch this. If you never believe that Jesus is alive and well, possibly that's the reason why we don't do it as consistent as we talk about other stuff. Because when we read the book of Acts, and I think we'll end up getting there this year at some time, we'll kind of go through the whole book, that was all the disciples acted like, as if Jesus was alive, almost as if he was there, because they went everywhere talking about Jesus. When was the last time we sat down and talked about him in our social circle? And then we came back and talked about it. Then we came back and talked about it. Then we came back and talked about it. And then we came back the next time and somebody said, I don't want to hear it. And then we came and started talking about him some more. Then they kicked us out. And we went back and started talking about him some more. My brothers and my sisters, that's when you know he's alive and well. Because when we read the biblical account, there is nothing stopping the disciples. Watch this. We know that there were laws put in place. You know, that's how we are. You know, they got a law in place for that. Do you remember when Peter and John are there, they say, after the impotent man had been healed in Acts chapter 4, they begin to say, should we obey God or should we obey man? They weren't throwing it at other believers. They were throwing it at the fact that we can't help but talk about Jesus. Because he's alive and well. Peter's message on the day of Pentecost, this same Jesus, who you have crucified, God has made him both Lord and Christ. It was a message they continued to repeat. Sometimes I know we don't want to go to somebody's house because they don't have the same rules that we have at our home. But the disciples welcomed those opportunities. Why? Because they were going to get a chance to talk about Jesus. He was not just shut up in their home. They were willing to go out everywhere they could. These Galileans, these simpletons, like you and I. But let's not keep you too long. When we look at this text, look again at what Jesus says. All power is given unto me in what? Heaven and in earth. He doesn't even say go yet. He really is making a declaration. It's like his declaration after death. Since you all don't believe me, let me sum it up like this. All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. The Bible records, my brothers and sisters, most of our Bibles say this, it tags it as the Great Commission. Now, if it's great, it means it's something of utter importance. Something that's huge. Like, this is a big deal. When we look at this, and I'm going to work this text backwards. I'm going to do something I've never done before. I'm going to work it from verse 18 to verse 16. All right? So pray with me. When we look at this text, we've got to see Jesus says, all power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. When he talks about power, it's the Greek word exousia. It's spelled E-X-O, for those of you who want to spell it out, E-X-O-U-S-I-A. This is not dunamis power. It's a different type of power. It's the power of choice, the power of liberty of doing as one pleases. So Jesus is saying, I can do whatever I want to do now. You've heard the song, God can do whatever he wants to, when he wants to, how he wants to, because he's sovereign. Jesus, when we talk about power here, exousia power is physical or mental power. It's the ability or strength which one is endued, which he can exert or possesses, or either can possess or exercise. I mean, not only does he have it, but he knows and can use it. But not just that type of authority, it's power of authority or influence and of right or privilege. Jesus, because of what he went through, God has made him both Lord and Christ. He has power of influence. He has power because, watch this, he is the only begotten Son of God, which means he's got all the rights and privileges to being God's Son. There are some privileges that some people will never have in your life because they're not your children. But when you are the only son, when you are the eldest son, rather, in that day, you got everything. You got to tell all your brothers and sisters what to do. But watch this. You got everything that your parents had. Now watch this. Jesus was the only begotten Son of God. He has no power to share it with. He's God's son. He has, it's his privilege being the Son of God. But not only that is Jesus saying this in power, it's power of rule or government, which will help us in one of the points. It's the power of him whose will and commands, watch this, must be submitted to by others and obeyed. Jesus here says, if we really look at that definition, you got to do something because I've got power. And because I said do it, and you all are under me, okay. You follow? He's not having a discourse with them. He's saying, he's predicating what he's about to say on what he's saying now. Everything else flows from the fact that he's got power. It's a command that he's given. The power of him, again, whose will, which means what he wants to happen. And his command, which means not just what he wants to happen. That's why you got to have the mind of Christ, because you'll know what he wants to happen without him even saying it. There ought to be some things in God that you know he wants without you even reading it. Now, I know that really ought to blow our minds. But you ought to know he wants us to love everybody because he loved you before you even read it. Does that make sense? You ought to know how he desires us to treat people and to be merciful towards people, because is there anybody who can say he's been merciful towards me? And I don't need to be pounded and pounded that we ought to show mercy, or blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. I already know I got it, and I don't want you to be a mercy blocker. If I got something like mercy, I know it don't belong to me. But then when we talk about this, whose will and commands must be submitted to by others and obeyed, we talked a couple weeks ago in our Bible study that if I asked everybody over here to move and they move, it doesn't necessarily mean that they obeyed.